Hello and welcome to The Menu, Monocle's show on food, drink and hospitality. I am Markus Hippi. In the next half an hour, we recap the top recipes we heard in food neighborhoods in 2021. Chefs from around the world will share some of their easy favorites that should keep you busy in the kitchen for many weeks to come. So stay tuned, there will be a lot of cooking inspiration ahead in the next 30 minutes here on Monocle 24. So let's get started. In the very beginning of 2021, we got a Spanish-inspired recipe from the chef at the Harbour Cafe in the beautiful village of Ely on the eastern coast of Scotland.
My name is Amy Ellis, and I am chef owner of the Harbour Cafe in Ely, Fife. I'm talking to you today about my dish, which is squid and chorizo stew, which is inspired by mine and Jack's time cooking in Spain. I love this dish because we are lucky enough to have the best fish on our doorstep. We also have organic vegetables grown down the road that makes this very simple dish special. But don't worry, if the only squid you can get is frozen and the only tomatoes you have in your cupboard are tinned, it will still be worth making and also means you can eat this dish all year round. Not only is it really full of flavour and colour, protein and is super comforting, you'll also be supporting our fishermen who seriously at the moment need all the help they can get. So all good dishes need a little bit of preparation, and this one starts with the squid. So I don't know if you know, there are over 300 species of squid, but currently at the moment we only eat about a dozen or so of these. I mean, this does change a bit, but about 12. So today we won't be using vampire or colossal squid. I'll be using just my local baby squid, which is delicious. So what will you need? You will need 4 medium or 8 baby squids, 8 mini raw picante, which is hot, chorizo. They need to be raw, that's really important. 1 leek, 1 medium white onion, 2 sticks of celery, 1 carrot, 1 romesco pepper, or just a red pepper if you can't get a romesco, 2 cloves of crushed garlic, 3 medium waxy potatoes as they hold together much better than other ones, 20 baby plum tomatoes or 6 regular tomatoes or your tin of tomatoes, 1 small bunch of flat leaf parsley or anything you've got in the garden which is fresh or in the fridge, doesn't matter too much, 1/2 a teaspoon of mustard seeds, 1/2 a teaspoon of cumin seeds, 25 grams of salted butter, or if it's unsalted, that's fine, just check your flavours, a little bit of olive oil, water, lemon and salt. So you've got all those things, now let's go to the method. First, let's start by preparing the squid. So first of all, get hold of the head and holding the body, pull the innards from the hood. This should come off really easily. When you have detached the head from the body, cut the tentacles off right after the eyes and throw away the guts. You will see in the hood, there is this beautiful translucent membrane, which is the quill. Pull it out and discard as well. Take the tentacles and pull out the beak. Now, next, we're going to take off the skin by pulling it along and take the wings off at the same time. So you just gently pull it off. Wash off the flesh and check inside for any leftover innards. You can use your hands for this, or if you want to, just push it gently with the back of a knife and it will just sort of ooze out. Now you want to cut it open along one side so it lies out flat on your board. And also with the back of the knife, just gently push out anything that shouldn't be there, discard any other membrane. Also at this point, we're going to score the fish, the inside of the fish. This helps get the flavour that you're using get all inside the fish and it curls up and it cooks a lot easier. So score crisscrosses all the way over the fish and then cut the whole piece into, I do 4 pieces, but you can do 4 or so pieces, it doesn't matter. Now, that's you, that's the squid all prepared, so pop it into the fridge until you're ready to put it in the dish. So the next step is to prep your vegetables. So first of all, peel your carrots and potatoes and then slice the leeks and celery into 1 centimetre rounds. then slice up the onions. Cut the carrots and also the pepper, your red pepper. Just make sure that you de-seed and de-pith the pepper because it can get quite bitter otherwise. And make sure that the carrots and the pepper are roughly the same size as your mini chorizo hole. Melt your butter and oil in a saucepan. Now, I don't mind what one you use. I normally use one with a heavy bottom, but it doesn't matter too much. Now then add your mustard seeds. And when the mustard seeds start to pop, put your vegetables in, all your chopped vegetables, your cumin, and a really good pinch of salt. Because this is the time when all your vegetables just take on a huge amount of flavour. So put that in and sweat it down until it becomes a little bit soft. Now, step three, add your diced potatoes. So with your potatoes, also cut them roughly the same size as your chorizo. Get your spoon, wooden spoon, give it a good mix for a few minutes and you'll start to see all these fantastic colours coming out of the chorizo, all the oils and the paprika and all the things that we love coming out. Then add some cold water just to cover the vegetables and chorizo. Put a lid on and cook until the potatoes are soft. So just on a simmer. And this normally takes around 15 minutes, but don't panic. If it takes a bit longer, that's fine. As long as they're soft, you'll be in business. Now, step four, add your tomatoes. Now, you can chop your tomatoes or dice your tomatoes. It doesn't really matter, but use all the seeds and all the skin because they'll be great. And if you're using fresh tomatoes, cook for another 5 minutes. If you're using tin tomatoes at this point, they will take a little bit longer to cook, probably 20 to 30 minutes, because they've got a bit more of an acid sort of flavour. So cook these out a little bit longer. So once this is done, you're going to add your beautiful squid. Take it out the fridge and make sure when you're putting it inside the pot that at this point everything should be quite hot. Put in your squid on top and then put the lid on. This now, give and take, it roughly takes 2 minutes. You'll know when it's cooked because simply it will curl and it doesn't take any long amount of cooking anyway. Finally, check the seasoning. You're very welcome to put the right amount of salt and fresh pepper in for it to be to your liking. Then I add some chopped up parsley and lemon juice. A good squeeze of lemon juice. Now, if you don't have the chopped parsley and you've got all sorts of other herbs, you can go for it. It doesn't matter. It's a very accepting dish. Now, I normally serve it in a bowl. I put lots of the juice into it and I have it with a really, really good bread. And I think this goes particularly well with a Spanish mentilla or a vino verde. So, bon appetit, have fun with it, and substitute anything that you don't have because honestly, it doesn't matter. Enjoy.
Amy Ellis from the Harbour Cafe there. Let's then continue with a recipe that creatively combines English and Thai flavours.
Hi, I'm John Chandrasak. I co-own London-based Anglo-Thai with my wife, Desiree. This is a concept that marries traditional Thai recipes with seasonal British produce, sort of represents both sides of my heritage. And at the moment, we're working towards opening our first restaurant, hopefully later this year. I'm here today to talk about an amazing charity called Hospitality for Heroes. They've raised money to provide meals for frontline NHS key workers during this global pandemic. And as something that they've created in this time as well is a recipe book called Recipes for Heroes, which has recipes from some of the leading chefs around the country. And I'm going to talk about the recipe that I've contributed to that cookbook today. So the recipe that I've contributed, it's a recipe called Yum Kai Dao in Thai, which literally translates to fried egg salad, a dish that isn't really commonly found in Thai restaurants outside of Thailand. So in the UK, you wouldn't really find it, but it's an incredibly easy dish to cook at home, something that I make quite regularly as a light lunch and just simply accompanied with some freshly steamed jasmine rice. At its core, it's essentially eggs, regular sort of hen's eggs, and you crack them into sort of smoking, smouldering hot oil, and you kind of have this cooking effect that sort of shallow deep frying of the eggs. And what that achieves is a really crispy exterior, like a crispy brown crunchy bottom, and the whites puff out, and that's what you're looking for, and the yolks remain completely molten and runny. And then that's paired with a sort of herbal salad with celery in it, and it's all dressed together in a kind of sweet, spicy, salty, tart dressing that sort of cuts through the richness of the egg yolks. So for this recipe, you're going to make a dressing, and the dressing consists of sort of equal parts fish sauce and lime juice. And what you're going to add to that is about half the amount of palm sugar. So with this, you're going to get a salty, a sour, and a sweet sort of dressing base. And to that, traditionally, you add raw garlic and Thai bird's eye chilies. And what you want to do is you want to take probably for about 2 tablespoons of fish sauce to 2 tablespoons of lime juice to 1 tablespoon of palm sugar. You're going to want 1 clove of garlic and about 1 to 2 bird's eye chilies, depending on how spicy you like your Thai food. And you're going to want to cut the chili and the garlic down sort of into a very fine paste so that it doesn't cause abrasion when you're eating it in the salad. And also, because it's raw garlic, raw chili, it can be quite potent. So you want to kind of cut those down, mix it together with the fish sauce, lime juice, and palm sugar, and that's going to make your dressing. And for the salad, traditionally, it's onion. So you can take a small white onion and just cut it thinly with the grain of the onion. 1 ripe tomato, cut that into bite-sized pieces. Doesn't matter if it's irregular. And then you want to have a nice handful, sort of like a generous handful of coriander. What I like to do is, instead of just picking the leaf off, I try and pick between where 2 leaves will be on the stem. So you get a bit of stem and a bit of leaf. And that allows the herb to retain some of its very vibrant integrity and texture. Then the last ingredient you're going to need to complete the salad is some celery. So traditionally, this is Asian celery, which is a sort of spindly thin stem. If you can't find that, which you might not be able to, regular celery is absolutely fine to use. And when I use it, regular celery in this dish, I tend to take off the thicker stems from the outside of the clump of celery and use the inside, smaller kind of yellow stems with the leaves on the top. And this is much more reminiscent of the flavor of Asian celery, a bit less concentrated. And you want to use the leaves as well. So just cut those down thinly. So you've got your dressing, and then you've now got your salad components. I'd have those in 2 separate bowls. And then the finishing part for this dish is to cook your eggs. And as I said before, you're looking to create these kind of crispy fried eggs that have puffed out whites, but still molten egg yolks. And the best way to achieve this is to get a frying pan. You want to add about 2 centimeters of vegetable oil, just regular vegetable oil, to the frying pan. And you want to heat that until it's smoking. And then be careful at this point, because obviously you're going to be working with some very hot oil. So the best and favored technique that I use is to crack an egg into a small ramekin or a small bowl, and then gently place this egg into the smoking hot oil. Get the bowl very close to the surface of the oil and then slowly drop it in. And what you'll find is that the egg will immediately start to sizzle, kind of crackle, bubble, and puff out. The whites will get really puffed and develop large translucent bubbles. That's what you're looking for, but obviously be very careful at that point. And you can add probably about 2 or 3 eggs to your frying pan at this point. You don't want to overcrowd it and reduce the heat of the oil too much. But what you're looking to do is create these very crispy eggs, like I say, with a very molten egg yolk. And that will probably fry for about 1 minute. You'll want to baste the top of the egg so it becomes white and translucent, but doesn't overcook the egg yolk. And at this point, you want to just remove the eggs and let them drain out on a lot of absorbent tissue paper to drain a lot of that oil off. And then that's everything that you need for this dish. So I would arrange the eggs on a plate, dress the salad with the spicy kind of tart dressing that you've made, and then just arrange all of that over the top of the fried eggs and serve with a big bowl of freshly steamed jasmine rice. And the idea is that when you crack through the egg yolks, sort of like the richness of that egg yolk will complement really nicely with this sour, salty, sweet, spicy dressing and fresh vegetable salad that you've created as well. So I hope you enjoy that recipe, and any questions about it, just reach out and let us know how you get on.
My thanks to John Chantrasak. This recipe and many more like it can be found in the Recipes for Heroes cookbook. You are listening to The Menu. Welcome back. You are listening to The Menu on Monocle 24. In this episode, we recap some of the best bits from food neighborhoods in 2021. In March, we heard a recipe by a US top chef who has brought his culinary skills to the Cotswolds in Britain.
Hi, my name is Andrew D'Ambrosi of D'Ambrosi Fine Foods, and I'm going to be talking to you about making the best tomato sauce ever. I say this because I had quite a few restaurants in New York City, and anytime I did this tomato sauce, it was mentioned on any of my reviews anywhere, and it's just a solid tomato sauce. And it's a base, so three ingredients at the beginning. Essentially, it's tomatoes, olive oil, and garlic. Can't get much simpler than that. Beyond that, you can add things, and we'll discuss that later, but let's start with the recipe. So recipe-wise, you want to start with 2.5 liters of quartered tomatoes. Arguably, it'd be nice if you used plum tomatoes or a juicy tomato like a vine ripe. You want that. You want very thinly sliced garlic cloves on a mandolin if you could. 0.75 grams of very thinly sliced garlic cloves, preferably on a mandolin. Hope you don't put your finger in there. Next, 250 grams of olive oil, just a nice olive oil. It doesn't have to be a finishing olive oil, but a nice olive oil. And then salt and pepper to taste. And we'll start with that. So most importantly, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to take that thinly sliced garlic and you're going to place it in a large pot, hopefully with a lot of airspace. So it's wide, kind of like what we call a rondeau. And you want to combine that with olive oil cold. So you don't want to put it on heat yet. You just want to have the garlic and the olive oil in that pot. You have your tomatoes quartered in the background, and now you turn the heat on. You turn the heat on and you start to basically sweat the garlic, and you have to constantly move the garlic through the oil with a spatula the entire time. You can't turn for 3 seconds because you don't want patches of burned garlic or garlic that gets toasted over the other areas. It all has to toast equally the exact same time. So you basically have to stir. The minute, the very second that you see the garlic kind of stop releasing its liquid and it turns golden, you slam those tomatoes in that pot and you put it on high and you continue on high and you stir the entire time and you try to render out the liquids from those tomatoes as fast as humanly possible. Did I mention also before that these tomatoes are not to be skinned? You need the skin. It's one of the most important things and why this pasta sauce is so dank, and dank meaning good. It is because the pectin in the skin is gonna kind of come to stick to everything. So you have your tomatoes in the pot. The garlic has already been toasted. You're stirring. It's okay right now, but as it starts to render down, it's gonna start to turn into molten hot lava. So at some point, I highly recommend either you have a kitchen glove on or you have a long sleeve shirt because you will have scars from this. But as the tomato sauce is popping and bubbling away, you keep stirring. You have to, otherwise it will burn because the sugars are now condensed and the liquid's leaving. Once you get to the point, I don't know if you've ever made a jam before, but it's similar to that. You want that tomato sauce to be the texture of a jam. And that's when you draw the spatula or the spoon through the sauce, it will not come back. It will stay separated. It's like Moses in the ocean. You know what I mean? Like you want it to stay separated. And at that point, you know your tomato sauce is going to be the right texture. And the pectin that's developed in there from the cooking and the releasing of the liquids, that is what's going to cling to your pasta. It is going to literally cling, and it's in a concentrated sauce. So you probably use a quarter of the amount of tomato sauce than you would normally, because again, this pasta will literally like just completely just cling on to whatever pasta you have. The reason why I started with this tomato sauce was at my restaurant in New York that I had at the time. It was called Bergen Hill, and we were doing a dish. It was called squid tagliatelle. And so we would take squid heads, cut them down the center, so you kind of fold them out. It looks like a triangle. And then we would stack them on top of each other, and then we would actually wrap them and freeze them. And then the next day when it was frozen, we would take it out and we would slice it on a deli slicer, and therefore we would actually have calamari or squid that was in the shape of tagliatelle pasta. Now, the problem with that is that it's a protein, it's not a starch, so it doesn't absorb anything. So it's not like pasta. So I needed a very tight tomato sauce that would cling to the product, and it did. And it was one of the more successful dishes on the menu that never came off the entire time it was on. So that being said, that's it. So once you get the tomato sauce to where it needs to be, it should be really, really, really thick, almost way too thick. It's like basically a jam at this point. I would transfer to a tray and allow it to cool off. Once cold, you can season. You can season beforehand too a little bit, but not too much because depending on what you want to add to it later. So I always recommend capers and basil. Once the tomato sauce is cold, you then fold in chopped basil and capers. And the reason why I do it when it's cold, if you're not eating it that moment, is that way the heat won't kill the basil and it also won't leach the salt out of the capers. And that's why I was telling you earlier to be careful with the seasoning, because if you do add capers, if you do add olives, you have the chance of obviously becoming too salty. So you kind of want to season as you see necessary. And that's it. You boil your pasta and you heat the sauce up and you throw it on the pasta and you have, you know, banging tomato sauce.
My thanks to Andrew D'Ambrosi for that recipe. Let's then hear a great risotto recipe from the top chef at Milan's Erba Brusca restaurant.
Hello, this is Alice Delcourt, chef and co-owner of Erba Brusca in Milan, Italy. Our restaurant is on the outskirts of Milan along the Naviglio Pavese, the canal on the southern part of the city. We have a working farm, and today we'll be making borragine risotto with caramelized garlic and nigella sativa. So you want to start by making the caramelized garlic. Take about a head of garlic. We want to peel all of the cloves. And then you can put the cloves in whole into a good knob of butter in a little pan. And just kind of cook those down until the garlic is very nice and brown and soft. Add a tiny splash of balsamic vinegar and a little bit of lemon juice and blend it all up. The garlic, the lemon juice, the butter that it was cooked in, and the balsamic vinegar. You'll have a nice shiny brown paste. Next, you're going to want to make your borage puree. This can be done with any kind of green leafy vegetable if for some reason you don't have borage. So nettles are great. If you're really in a squeeze, even some kind of chard or spinach can kind of do it. But it's great if you have some kind of wild, stronger tasting vegetable like borage or nettles. So you want to clean those fast, just take off like the big stalks, and then you want to blanch them for about 2 or 3 minutes in some nice salty water. Take them out. If you want to keep your vegetables nice and green, put them in an ice bath. If not, you can just take them out and squeeze them dry a little bit and blend them up in a blender. You're going to get a nice bright green puree and put that aside to put in your risotto next. Now you want to get prepped for your risotto. So best if you have either chicken or vegetable broth on hand. If you need to make a broth, we always just do equal parts celery, onion, carrot, and then whatever kind of chicken bones or maybe a meat bone, or maybe you made lamb stew yesterday and there's a bone hanging around, throw that in there, a couple peppercorns and a bay leaf. I like to slightly salt my broth. Some people don't, but just make sure if you don't that you salt your food. You want to bring your broth up to a simmer. And then you can start prepping your rice. You want between 80 and 100 grams of rice per person. So it depends on how many people you're having over. I usually do a probably abundant, like 400 grams of rice for 4 people. You want to throw that into your pan with a tiny bit of oil and then start toasting your rice. Just keep on toasting it at a medium heat until it's too hot for you to touch. So just keep on touching it with your hands now and then, the grains of rice. As soon as it's too hot for it to touch, it's ready. And you want to cover it with broth. So you cover it just right to the edge with broth and stir it and let that absorb. Once it's absorbed, continue to cover it with broth, and that's what makes it become risotto. So you're going to keep stirring your rice until you see the little grain of rice. It looks a little transparent on the outer layer. You can still see a little bit of white in the middle, but transparent on the outer layers. And that means it's almost done. You want to try it. And usually it's a little bit crunchy in the middle, al dente, but not crunchy anymore. So as soon as it looks about that, make sure you've continued to reabsorb the broth. When it looks like it's nice and reabsorbed, you want to add your borage puree that you've made, and that will kind of take place of the last of the broth. Stir that until it kind of warms through the rice. When it looks like a nice consistency, creamy and very hot still, take it off of the burner, put it aside to rest for about 1 or 2 minutes, and then you want to beat a nice knob of butter and some Parmesan into the rice. Beat until your arm hurts. So you don't want to beat it really hard until you get a nice creamy consistency. If it looks a little too dry, just add a tiny bit of broth. If it looks a little bit too liquidy or soupy, I would just let it rest for a lot longer and then try again. Once you finish that, test for salt and borage taste, if you like it greener, just add some more, and then plate it. You want to finish it with a couple dollops of the garlic cream on top. And then I put Nigella sativa seeds on top, which are little black seeds, which give kind of a nice eucalyptus taste. But you can also substitute with poppy seeds or almonds, or some people like sesame seeds. And I always like to finish with a little bit of lemon zest as well. So, buon appetito.
Alice Delcor from Milan's Erba Brusca restaurant there. And finally, before we continue with this week's dinner soundtrack recommendation, let's hear from one more chef. Here is a delicious Caribbean Creole dessert recipe from the author of the cookbook, Sunshine Kitchen.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Bolozier, and I'm the author of Sunshine Kitchen. And today, I'm going to tell you how to do a coconut flan. That is the Sunday treat that my mom would make for us. My brother, my sister, and I would actually get to eat two flans if we were good. It's sweet and delicious. So the first thing you do when you make coconut flan is you have to preheat your oven, 180 degrees Celsius. And in a bowl, you put one can of condensed milk and one can of evaporated milk. You have to use 4 eggs. With the different milks, you mix in the egg yolks, basically using a whisk. Then you can add the cinnamon, the nutmeg, and the lime zest. And gradually, you'd whisk in some coconut milk. So again, a can of coconut milk. You can then add desiccated coconut. And in another bowl, you beat the egg whites until stiff peaks form. Gently fold the coconut mixture, so the milk mixture that you've done, into the egg whites. Then you go and you use a frying pan, you hit the sugar. So you need approximately about 60 grams of golden granulated sugar, lime juice, and a bit of water. I'd say about 100 ml. You do that on medium heat until you get a deep brown caramel. Then you take your ramekin. That recipe is for about 6 to 8 ramekins, and you'd pour that caramel at the bottom of the ramekin. Not too much, just so that like the bottom of the ramekin is covered. You'd put the ramekins in a deep oven-proof dish and pour in enough boiling water to reach halfway up the ramekins. Then you pour the coconut flan mixture into the ramekin and bake in a bain-marie for 35 minutes. Until it's just set. Then you take it out of the oven, leave it to cool at room temperature. Then you put it in the refrigerator for at least 2 hours before serving.
Thanks to Vanessa Bolozier, author of Sunshine Kitchen. And that's all for this edition of The Menu. For previous episodes of this program, go to Monocle's website, SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe to the show so that it automatically arrives onto your device every week. This show was edited and mixed by David Stevens, and I am Markus Hippi. Once again, we finish this program with a dinner soundtrack recommendation. Here is Sydney Youngblood with Sit and Wait. Thanks for listening.